Hello?
Ricky, it's Gina.
Gina!
You probably know that.
I do.
Where are you right now? Are you in Chicago?
I am. I don't have to work today, so I'm at home. It's nice.
Is it freezing?
I don't know if it's technically freezing, but yes, it is freezing.
So, all right, we should probably get down to business. I'm going to take just a minute to tell our listeners what's going on, okay?
Awesome.
Ricky is my niece, which is problematic in a couple of ways. One thing, Ricky and I are basically the same age. That's just a weird family deal. But also, Ricky is transgender and prefers gender-neutral language, and there is no gender-neutral term for niece or nephew, at least not that I know of. Ricky, am I right about that?
As far as I know, if anybody has an answer to that, I'd like it.
I'd like it, too, because it's very awkward to always refer to you as my kin.
You know, whatever works.
But anyway, today's show here on Central Standard is all about the complicated relationships a lot of us have with the Midwest. We can feel this intense pride and love for all the things we associate with home, but we might also feel this intense frustration, not just with stereotypes, with reality too. Are we nostalgic and old-timey in a good way, or do we stubbornly resist change and progress in a bad way? Throughout the show, we're going to profile people who love the Midwest, but they all have this one thing that drives them crazy that they work really, really hard to change. And we're starting with Ricky. So, Ricky, we haven't really talked about a lot of this, but you live in Chicago. You were born in Kansas City, and then you moved to Oklahoma. Is Oklahoma the Midwest?
That is the most complicated question to ask. I have never really considered myself Midwestern because Oklahoma, you know, it's pretty far south, but it's also not the south because I feel like that starts in Texas. I don't know, Arkansas maybe. But I don't know. It's a really good question. I do not consider myself Midwestern, but again, when I travel, everybody seems to consider me Midwestern. So.
Why do people consider you Midwestern when you travel?
Because I'm not from a coast, and I do a lot of coastal traveling, and I feel like when you end up either east or west, if you are from that flyover area or the dot in the middle of the map, as it were, you know, that's what people think.
So
it's all the Midwest.
Would you say that you're sort of like caught between Southern and Midwestern?
I would say so. And I think it's totally appropriate given every other gray area in my life. So it seems to be where I reside is the gray areas.
But what's the difference between Southern and Midwestern?
You know, okay, so here's the thing, is that I have noticed in the Midwest, and I was wondering if this was like an urban versus rural thing, but I don't think it is, because when I am more south, so I would say like Oklahoma-ish, like when I'm out of Kansas, people become more chatty and will actually engage me in conversation, whereas I think the more Midwestern I am, the less chatty people are, if that makes sense. Like, I think people are very resistant to my chit-chat here in Chicago. And I was wondering, maybe it's just because people in cities are in a hurry trying to get somewhere. But it's not, because I've been in downstate Illinois and people still don't want to chat me up. So I don't know. Maybe it's just Illinois, but I find a lot of resistance in Midwestern folks to my what I perceive as niceness. I don't know.
So is there a difference between nice and chatty? Because Midwesterners think of themselves as very nice, but I don't know that
they
the word
really
chatty
do.
Comes up.
Yeah, that's that, you know, they really do. And it's interesting because I don't see it. It's mean. I'm probably going to get a lot of hate. Like, it's an inauthentic niceness. I don't know.
This all right.
Really, this sounds harsh. I know. I have a lot of haters already.
No. So, okay. You generally seem pretty proud of being not from a coast, if we're going to define Midwestern that way.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. There's something about being from one of the reddest states and being the complete antithesis of what people think of as being from that space. And I love that. I love that.
Explain Oklahoma. How you're the antithesis of that.
Yeah, well, I'm queer. I'm gender queer. I'm Jewish. And I think that when people think of Oklahoma, they think of, a straight cisgender Christian evangelical who votes the red party line. And I'm not that. And I think that many people in Oklahoma are not that. And I really, really enjoy when I do travel and encounter folks who are like, I have either never been to Oklahoma or I've just literally driven through and could not get out of there quick enough. Like, I get to push back on that. And I like challenging people's assumptions about where I'm from. Like, I love Oklahoma, that red dirt. You know, I love being in Kansas City. I love visiting family in Kansas City. Like, there's something about that city that I think is really beautiful and great. Like, all of the architecture, like, it's, you know, there's a lot to love in the Midwest. And I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we don't get our due.
But some things totally drive you bonkers, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, being queer and being Jewish can be pretty difficult. Definitely.
Wait, I want to get back to that, but you said something kind of recently about how you might not feel safe living in a lot of places in the Midwest outside of Chicago. And that felt really almost tragic to me because you studied LGBT health in rural communities. Your entire life's work is actually making sure that people like you can be safe and healthy no matter where they live. And yeah, it's really sad to me that you don't feel safe necessarily throughout this region.
Yeah, it's really sad to me too, actually. And I think that, that's not just an LGBTQ thing. I think that there are lots of folks for whom, non-urban areas don't necessarily feel the safest, which is really sad because honestly, I can't think of anything I would love more than having a big chunk of land in the middle of nowhere and, being out on that. But the reality is that's not super safe for folks who have visible difference. And I am very visibly, I think, in some ways, not cisgender, and folks mark me as different and as other. And
how do you feel that? How do you feel that when you're...
Oh my God, like this, well, one, like people will straight up say things. So there's that, like people are very, when something does not conform to the way they expect things to be, oftentimes people don't have filters and will say things. You know, I think that there is this narrative that transgender people are a threat in bathrooms, but really the biggest threat is for transgender people in bathrooms. I've been threatened in bathrooms. And I also want to say that that happens in Chicago too, that that's like not necessarily an urban rural thing, but I do think that it is more prominent. I also think this is like a weird political climate where people do feel more emboldened. Like I feel that, and it's not, you know, beyond the verbal threats, like you just feel people staring at you. And frankly, like, I just want to go to the grocery store. Like, I don't want to be interrogated about my gender on a regular basis. Like, I just want to be a human who moves through the world and can do that with relative peace.
Can you explain a little bit about the work you do?
Yeah, so I work for the Institute for Sexual and Gender Minority Health and Well-Being, which is quite a mouthful, out of Northwestern University. We are the first interdisciplinary cross medical and non-medical campus LGBTQ research center in the U.S., and I run a couple of randomized control trials for HIV prevention. One is for folks here local in Chicago, and another one is an online intervention for gay, bisexual, queer, same-gender loving men who are in relationships with other men, to be able to come together using video chat technology to gain communication skills, different relationship education skills, because LGBTQ folks, most places, not just living in the Midwest, but most places, don't get access to things. I mean, actually, honestly, most people don't get access to things like, how do you have a healthy relationship? How do you engage with another human being? What is consent? Like, how do bars play into your relationship? Things like that. And also, those things are particularly relevant to LGBTQ folks who haven't had access to a lot of social life until... Well,
can I jump in and ask you what it's like to do that kind of work in the Midwest?
Hard. I mean, it's hard to do that kind of work nationally because there's just not a lot of money for it. And, you know, there have been many cuts. The NIH is currently operating without a budget, and that's where a lot of the funding comes from. And, you know, the first things to go are the things that are deemed unsavory, and people don't want to talk about LGBTQ folks, and they certainly don't want to talk about LGBTQ folks and sex. So it's hard. It's especially hard when, like, it's hard enough working within favorable conditions. So it's even more difficult when there's social stigma still, and folks just really don't think that it's something that should be funded. So it's difficult.
Ricky, what are some of the words that come to your mind when I say Midwest?
Home is the first. I think resilience is one that really comes to mind. Scrappy. Complicated.
Yeah. Complicated is a good one based on what you've said so far. Hang on with me because I want to introduce you to someone, okay?
Sounds good.
D. Rashawn Gilmore is in the studio with me now, and I'm thinking he might relate to some of what he just heard.
I was amening and echoing everything Ricky was saying.
You're from Kansas City. Are you proud of that?
I am, but I'm going to be completely honest, Gina, as I always am when I'm on your show. There are moments when I'm not very proud to be from Kansas City.
Okay, talk to me about the pride first. What does make you feel proud?
I think that we are a very hardworking part of the country. I think that's something that often goes overlooked. We're hardworking. We're industrious. We're also very family focused, which I really do appreciate that. Like, I love the focus on family. I think we're also very, you know, self-deprecating, almost to a fault sometimes, and very laid back. And sometimes I think that that is mistaken as sort of complacency. But no, we're really just we kind of keep things pretty chill.
What strikes you as funny about the way things go down here?
Oh, that's a tough question. So I don't know if there's so much funny as it is. Sometimes things to me seem so backwards because we can be kind of a one-horse town in a lot of ways. And I know a lot of Midwestern communities are very much that way. So I don't know what strikes me as funny about Kansas City. That's a tough one. I don't even know if I have an answer for that.
Well, that's okay. What about this side of it that you aren't so proud of, about just Midwestern culture, Midwestern foibles and such?
It's just too slow for me sometimes. I'm a very high energy person, as you know, and I think sometimes we just take forever to do anything in the Midwest.
For example,
build a new airport, build the Bruce R. Watkins Drive. It took 50 years almost to build a freeway through the city. Whether you like it or not, the plan was there and it took forever to get it done.
You started an organization called Blackout aimed at reducing health disparities for Black men. Does anything about your work and the problems you're trying to solve within your own community feel particularly Midwestern for you?
It does. I mean, there are some unique complications that result from being in the Midwest in terms of people's, not only just their understanding of issues around gender and sexual orientation and stigma around HIV and other illnesses, but it's also in the way that we don't like to discuss them. So there's somewhat of a lack of understanding, but then a refusal to have open, honest conversation about it. Because while we're not completely like Southern with some of those sort of idiosyncrasies, there are things we just don't like to talk about in what might be considered polite company in the Midwest.
Take me back and tell me your story, and tell me what about your story feels Midwestern to you.
That's a tough one. I think, again, it goes back to, for me, a focus on family and how important that is. And as I said, too, about being very industrious, I come from a family of folks that pretty much have three common threads running through it. That's religion, politics, and business, which are typically three things you wouldn't want to mix together anyway, but they are very much a part of the fiber of my being. And they come from, again, that industrious, hardworking background.
Tell me about, though, like, how did religion play into your upbringing? Tell me about your childhood and tell me about especially that religion piece of it, I guess.
Well, mine is a very unique story in a lot of ways. So one half of my family on my mom's side are Muslims. So I was actually born and raised into a Muslim faith. I went to Muslim schools early in my upbringing up till about third or fourth grade. But my dad's side of the family is Roman Catholic, or was. And so here's my mom and my dad, and they come together, this Muslim and this Catholic. And it's almost like a bad joke about being told. And they got married and brought our families together, both their families together. But for me, then coming out later as queer-identified gay man, that sent some shockwaves through my family and still continues to reverberate to this day.
When did you come out?
About 5 or 6 years ago, and I came out for one reason. I was tired of hiding. I think we often tell people, though, you just come out, come out. It's not always safe, and it's not always safe in the Midwest. And God forbid if you're in a rural community or anywhere in the Midwest and a family that doesn't quite get it, it could be harmful for you. And so for me, I came out because I was tired of, you know, flipping over pictures every time my mother came by or having my lover run down the back stairs or out the front, you know, front door before they got there.
Do you think that that is a different experience in the Midwest?
I mean, it can happen anywhere, but it definitely seems to be much more pervasive in the Midwest because it's just not accepted or expected.
Do you think that, you know, in the work you do and in your own life experience, do you think that some of the things that you love the most about the Midwest can also be some of the things you hate the most about the Midwest?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think is great about the Midwest is that it's very accessible in a way. And I tell people all the time, they're like, oh, I'm going to leave Kansas City and I'm going to go off to, you know, L.A. or Atlanta or New York or wherever they're going to go. And I say, well, you know, go. You can always come back, because coming to Kansas City in particular always feels like home. And I think that's true of most places in the Midwest. So Ricky is right about that. The first thing that comes to mind for me, too, is home. And I think for many people, that's one of the best things about it. The other side of that is that it can be the fact that it's still kind of like stuck in time sometimes. So it's good for if you're reintegrating, but it can be difficult if you're looking to make some progress.
Would it still feel like home if it wasn't stuck in time?
I think as long as the relationships are there, yes. I think it really would.
So if the same people were here?
I think some of the same people were here. You know, and for me, that mostly means family and close friends. But I think, yes. I mean, you can come back now. My sister has moved all over the country, and she's back in Atlanta, Georgia now. And one of the things that she would say is that Kansas City feels like home, but it's also nice to kind of be away. But when you come back here, you can always reintegrate right away.
So we want to hear from our listeners about just what it is about the Midwest that you love, that you hate. Maybe it is both of those things. If you love the Midwest so much you'd hate to leave, but hate one thing so much you're kind of tempted, call 816-235-2888 to tell your story. Or maybe you're home for Thanksgiving and you already did leave. Kind of wish you could come back. 816-235-2888. Rashawn, would you ever think about leaving here?
Yes. I'm sorry, that was too enthusiastic, wasn't it? Let me pause and calmly contemplate the question. I think yes, but again, it's not in the sense of, you know, because I hate Kansas City or hate the Midwest. I think for me, it's about if I find an opportunity for expanded personal development, I would leave if I had a relationship that couldn't allow me to be here. But it's not because I hate the Midwest. It's for me, I just want a different pace of life.
So the pace is part of Midwestern life for you.
Yes. And a good example of that is how we drive here. Now, Ricky is in Chicago, so it's a little bit different there. But anywhere in this Kansas City metropolitan area, you know, it just drives me crazy how people love to get in the passing lane and just kind of, you know, think about their lives or do their nails or whatever they're doing instead of actually driving. And that's reflective of how we are as a people here. We just kind of take our time.
Ricky, jump in. I mean, What are
I don't even drive. That's something about living in a large city that has been really nice. But I actually miss the Midwestern pace. Like, I like a little bit of a more laid back, slow kind of life. So I miss that.
I happen to know that you two have something in common in your feelings about how people communicate in the Midwest. Ricky, I'm going to let you start on this.
Oh my God, what? The passive aggressive?
Go on.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
The fake nice Midwestern thing? Oh, yeah. That is real.
Describe it.
I'm glad to hear that I'm not alone in that. Oh, I mean, folks will, it's like the Southern equivalent of, like, bless your heart, but I'd rather hear bless your heart because I know what that means. Like, I feel as though people are not forward and dance around issues, and I am not that way. I was not raised that way. I think that might be a Kaufman thing, maybe.
It might be.
Yeah. A direct communicator. And people are very taken aback by that, I have found. So it's been difficult for me.
Ricky, I'm in the same boat. I know we've talked before, Gina, on Central Standard about Kansas City nice and how it is really not nice at all. And I think that what's so frustrating to me about that is that we feel like we're being nice, but we're not always very warm and inviting and authentic. And I think to Ricky's point, you hear people saying things, but you know that's not what they really mean. And I think one reason why I may stand out here a little bit more than some in Kansas City is because I'm a very direct person. And I don't think that we have that very often here in our conversation. We like to dance around issues rather than deal with them head on.
So I know this is hard, but when it comes to some of the things that we hold up as sort of nostalgic about the Midwest, like this good old-fashioned way of life, does anything about that idea appeal to you, even though in both of your personal stories, the politics around that at least have been incredibly painful? Ricky, I'm going to start with you.
I mean, I think that's a really good question because I wouldn't necessarily call it old-fashioned because I don't think there's much about me that anybody would describe as old-fashioned. But I do think that there is a desire for maybe simplicity, like paring down the sort of excess that comes along with living in the third largest city in the country, which is super overwhelming at times. That's not to say I want to romanticize the past at all. And to be quite honest, like the present is not much better for a lot of folks than the past has been. So it's not like a romanticizing of that so much as I think just that desire to live a more simple, less stressful, less inundated life.
Rashawn?
I think the economics play a big factor in that. You know, one of the things I always hear from people when they talk about why they either want to come to the Midwest or why they are eager, not so eager to leave, is because it's the cost of living is typically good here. And it's easy to kind of get in and access the community and find a good place to stay, get a good, decent job. And I think those are values that people look for wherever they want to go, wherever they move. But I think it's the fact that we are very hardworking and very entrepreneurial that makes the big difference for me.
DeRashawn Gilmore, founder of Blackout, host of Unbossed and Unbothered on KKFI, thank you.
Thank you so much, Gina.
And Ricky Hill, joining us from Northwestern University in Chicago. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
It was good to talk to you.
Yeah. I hope to see you soon.
You can call 816-235-2888 to tell your story. We're talking about the Midwest. And if you love this region so much you'd hate to leave, but hate one thing so much you're kind of tempted, that's the story we want. 816-235-2888.
Mississippi River, where I like life the best. I don't mind the West Coast, and I don't mind the East Coast. Oh, baby, but I ain't gonna live on no coast. I I'm just a plain old Midwestern boy. Yes, I'm getting by on Central Time.
That's Pokey Lafarge's Living on Central Time. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're hearing how some of the Midwest's problem-solving, creative people deal with the crazy contradictions about the place they live. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us about the Midwestern cliche that you love to embrace and the one you'd be just fine never hearing again. I'm joined now by Reagan Bluehl. She's in Sedalia, Missouri. Hi, Reagan.
Good morning.
Reagan is a dairy specialist for the University of Missouri's Agricultural Extension, and she started a support group for women in dairy as part of that. So, Reagan, what does the Midwest mean to you? What are some of the first words you think of?
Well, I was born and raised in Sedalia, Missouri, and report now down in Southwest Missouri in Monette, and serve dairies across the state. And I guess when I think about the Midwest, both as I was raised in central Missouri and then now as I work with dairy farmers, I can't help but have the words such as grit and resilience really resonate in my mind.
Tell me about, is that based on your experiences working with farmers? Can you tell me about some of those experiences that have really impressed on you, just that kind of grit and resilience?
Absolutely. Yes, as a dairy specialist for the University of Missouri, I'm blessed to be able to spend each day working with the salt of the earth. These dairy farmers go in, day out, milking cows, and it just encapsulates agriculture by talking about grit. We work every day because you love the farm and you love the heritage and you just love creating food for the masses. There's only about 2% of us that populate the rural America that can claim to be farmers and grow food for those even within but outside of the Midwest.
Do you see agriculture as a really crucial part of the Midwestern identity?
It's absolutely critical. You know, and when you were asking about words that define Midwest, and maybe a statement is kind of flyover country. And when I think to myself, I wish we weren't in many ways, but it's kind of nice to think about agriculture in the state of Missouri representing about $88.4 billion worth of economic impact. And so in this flyover country, we are growing the food that the nation is consuming. And even outside of the nation, you know, 16% of dairy exports went out of here. And so we're feeding the world here in flyover country.
Well, you were just saying, though, also that it's 2% of the people who are growing that food. And so the idea that 2% of the people embody what the Midwest is all about is super interesting to me. I mean, I'm not criticizing that. I'm really curious about what you see as traits and behaviors in that world that represent the Midwest in a bigger way.
Solid core values, good neighbors, good stewards of the land. You know, a perfect example, when Kansas wildfires were occurring and there were thousands of people, cattle harmed, but numerous farms burnt to the ground, absolutely nothing left, nothing, no fence, no anything. And we saw a massive outpour of resources, of help, people helping, people sending feed, people sending money, and most of those efforts stemmed from that 2%. It's as if farmers recognize what it is like to have that quality of life, to know and love what you do every day, choring, even though it's super hard work, but you love it. And you want those other people to continue to love it. And so you reach out. And so it's really that taking care of neighbor and the family values. I was able to listen in just briefly before coming on. And I heard you talk about nostalgia. And I I guess, yes, the embodiment of that nostalgia occurs every day through agriculture, and I believe it to be a beautiful thing. These guys wake up every morning, and they choose their attitude. And perhaps we could all be good stewards of our life and wake up and choose our attitude and be happy about what you do every day.
That is beautiful. I mean, I'm curious, you lived in Columbus, Ohio for a while. Did that feel Midwestern to you in the same way?
Well, I guess not. And I don't know if it was a Midwestern thing as much as it was size of city, perhaps. I'm not sure. Knowing your neighbor, accountability. I think they considered themselves Midwest.
But you don't?
I constantly long to be back in central Missouri or even southwest Missouri, just to be close to people that I could relate to. And I wasn't born or raised in agriculture, but I longed for that. These, like I said, salt of the earth, these are good people. And it's a privilege to work with them every day.
Let's talk to some of our listeners. We've got Bowen with us from Overland Park. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. What can you share with us?
Well, I have, by the way, what she just said, I want a second. People are always talking about, you know, this is flyover country, et cetera. And they're in a hurry to get somewhere else other than where they are. I wrote this poem about Kansas a long time ago and thought I might share it with you if you're interested.
Please.
Now gather around, my friends and neighbors. Let me chew upon your ear. I'd like to tell you all a story about my journey this past year. Whee! Everywhere I'd wander, everywhere I'd roam, people'd stop and ask me. They'd say, boy, where's my home? Well, I'd buckle up my trousers and take in a healthy breath and tell them, friends, that Kansas is where I like to rest. Whoo! Now my friends would start to laugh and snarl and cough under their breath. They'd say, boy, don't you know I went through there on my way out to the west, and I'm afraid you must be some poor man's fool, because when I went by, I could see for sure that Kansas wasn't cool. Now, just a second, partner. I've been out there to the coast. I know the people lives out there surely like to boast. Although I thought my journey was surely mighty fine, I realized quite frankly I left part of me behind. You see, the people there in Kansas don't rush about to get nowhere. We realize the facts of life, that we're already there.
When you say we're already there, what's it like there?
We're not in a hurry to get someplace else because this is a great place. We're people grounded in the land. And, well, the woman that was on right before me said it succinctly, perfectly. It's a great place. It's also a place of a lot of creativity, important stuff. The Land Institute here is in Kansas. Incredible poetry, writing has come out of Kansas. Langston Hughes is very much connected to Kansas.
Well, thanks, so Bowen. Thanks for your ode.
You bet. Take care.
And now let's talk with Bridget. We're going to hear from Bridget in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Bridget.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
I'm calling because sometimes I get tired of kind of hearing the Midwest batted about. I'm a native Kansas Cityan. I've been very fortunate in my life. I've worked in Malaysia. I traveled the world. I've traveled the country and a lot of the Midwest. And I think a lot of generalizations are made about the Midwest to people assume things about us because they expect us to be provincial. And the Midwest has a lot of large education institutes, but I think what really underlies the Midwest and in relation to people who've been talking about farms, many of us are still connected to farms, even though they may be generations away. Many of my family members still live on heritage farms, so I'm lucky. But I think a lot of people carry with them the graciousness that is part of the Midwest that comes from really understanding the cycle of life and having gratitude for all the different places we are in life. And
can you tell me more about that cycle of life thing and what that has to do with agriculture and like a even a distant agricultural past?
I think that when we are aware of the grace that we have been given, whether we are a child that needs to be taken care of or an adolescent that is kind of being cranky with us or someone who is making the passage to wherever the next place is, that because we have the seasons here and we have the time to reflect on what those changes mean, we are not always in a hurry to get someplace else, that we enjoy the here and now and for what the moment is, and we keep that awareness as we go on to the next stage.
Thank you, Bridget.
Well, you're welcome. And so sometimes when people hear us pause or we seem indirect, I would hope they would keep that in mind.
Okay, thank you. That's a good thought. Before we get on to our next guest, I want to turn back to Reagan. And Reagan, you know, we've heard a lot about pace here, but we've also heard from you about how hard people work. And when there's a lot to get done, it might look slow, but it might feel a different way. And I wonder if you can talk to me about that idea of a slow pace here in the Midwest when, you know, you're talking about people working hard to combat wildfires.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, you know, I was thinking of the irony as they were talking about the slow pace and the fast lane, and we've all been there. We've all been behind the slow guy when you've got somewhere to go, and that exists on every inch of this beautiful state. But you know, you think about it, and the farmers getting the crops out during harvest, and the pace of putting, you know, the seed in the ground right before the rain. And so we're pretty fast paced when we have to be. And you get what needs to be done when it needs to be done. And so I wouldn't necessarily call us slow paced. I do think the pace is maybe more in reference of values, in my opinion. And so we value different things, family values, and valuing your neighbor and slowing down for a moment to relax and spend some time with your family, or slowing down to help fix the fence for your neighbor. You know, that maybe is more definitive on the pace in my mind than it is, getting stuck in the fast lane.
Reagan Bluel with us from the University of Missouri's Ag Extension. Thank you.
You bet. Pleasure.
Call 816-235-2888 with your story about loving the Midwest but wanting something about it to change. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back.
I love New York and Cali, but I ain't moving. Too overpopulated, saturated with humans. And I'm not big on rappers, actors, or models. If I had to dip, I'd probably skip to Chicago. None of this is to diss, no one, nowhere. Like, damn, I'm from Minnesota, land of the cold air. Too many mosquitoes and a fair share of egos. But like my man Sabi says, that's where my mommy stays. So if they people laugh and giggle when you tell them where you live, say, say. And if you know this is where you want to raise your kids, say, say. If you're from the Midwest and it doesn't matter where, say, say. If you can drink tap water and breathe the air, say, say.
That's the Atmosphere's Shh, Shh, with a song that the title is very hard to say on the radio. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And today we're hearing how some of the Midwest's most progressive, problem-solving, creative people deal with the crazy contradictions about the place they live, the things they love, the things they want to change, all of it. Our next guests are Kansas Cityans Emily Ferris and Idris Raoufi. Emily is a craft and food expert. She uses profanity strategically. She has a book on casseroles. And Idris is in the construction business. He studied urban planning and transportation, and he is an activist for bicycle access here in town. They are both new parents. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So let's do this real quick. First words that come to your mind when you think Midwest.
Shh. Sorry, I had to.
I would say easy.
Oh, it's hard to describe in one word.
Yeah,
I guess home. Oh, that's lame.
I want to jump back in and just acknowledge Emily is from here, went somewhere else, and came back. And Idris, you are originally from Southern California.
Yeah, Yeah, I moved here 11 years ago.
What did you think of the Midwest before you came, and then how did the reality maybe surprise you?
The first time a bank teller asked me how my day was, all I could think of is, like, what's your angle? What do you really want? You don't know me.
How do you understand that differently now?
She was being polite.
Emily, I mean, when you left the Midwest, did being away give you some different perspective on what that meant?
It did. When I left, I was in a hurry to get away from where I grew up, which was a suburb of Kansas City that, looking back, was maybe not the most desirable place to grow up, and did have some of the more negative stereotypes of the Midwest, which I think also some of the positive ones.
And then, such as?
There was a lot of racism and homophobia and judgment and hypocrisy and closed-mindedness.
Those are the negative ones, I'm thinking.
Those are some of the negative ones. but then also, you know, I could play outside in the neighborhood with my friends, and my friends' parents all knew me, and it was very kind of, it was close-knit enough, and I think I have some pretty good values from my upbringing. But I also grew up where there was a huge meth problem, and I wanted to get away, and being away definitely made me appreciate the Midwest more, because I think I became very defensive about being from the Midwest.
How did that take form? How did you express that?
When I would tell people I was from Kansas City, first everyone would call me Dorothy, which made me crazy because I was from Missouri.
Plus eye roll.
Yes. And so there was this whole, like, Kansas City is in Missouri thing that became, so I became very, like, Missouri proud, something I never expected myself to be. And I have a Missouri tattoo on my forearm, and I just became very Missouri proud. And, you know, people just have these preconceived notions about who someone is because they come from the Midwest. And, oh, you're nice and you're sweet and you're innocent. And I'll tell you, I am not nice. I am a kind person and I am a good person, but I am not a nice person. No one has ever used that word to describe me, and I'm very okay with that. But people just assume those things about you. And I think that might be part of the reason that I am a little edgier and throw around profanity and
to remind people that you're not that stereotype.
Exactly.
And yet the casserole seems like an embrace of the stereotype. You have written a cookbook of casseroles, but this all started in New York.
It did. I was having a Martha Stewart release party when she was released from prison. And I had some food snob friends over, because a lot of my friends were general snobs or food snobs. And I made this macaroni and corn casserole that my sister makes with boxed macaroni and cheese and canned corn. And this guy who his family owns one of the oldest steakhouses in New York was just eating it straight from the foil or the Pyrex, I don't know what it was in, with a plastic spoon, and just going crazy over it. And I decided to have this casserole party, and everyone in New York went crazy over it. There were a lot of Midwestern transplants, and it became this kind of, like, kitschy Midwestern, this embrace of Midwestern culture.
Is Midwestern culture kind of kitschy?
It can be. I have such a hard time labeling Midwestern anything, because there are the stereotypes, and most of them exist in some form or another in most or many parts of the Midwest. But then a lot of them are being defied every day all over the Midwest. So it's really hard for me to say, yes, the Midwest is nice, and yes, the Midwest is kitschy, and yes, the Midwest is the Bible Belt, because the opposite is happening all over the Midwest too.
Idris, for you, when you think about, I mean, okay, part of how I introduced you has to do with your relationship with transportation and bicycles. And when we think of this idea of the Midwest being a place where you can play in the yard, something people will say is, like, kids can ride their bikes in the neighborhood. Is that the Midwest that you've discovered?
In part. I mean, in regards to transportation, we're more focused on municipalities or regions that rely on transportation to move people, where job centers aren't centrally located, potentially. And in the Midwest, transportation is an equity issue in a lot of ways. So, like, if you do have the privilege to grow up in a community where you do feel safe riding your bicycle or walking down sidewalks, that's no longer, like, the standard across the Midwest, because we have these cities that are kind of left out of that, becoming more dangerous from, like, a car-centric perspective.
You're, as I also mentioned, a new parent. How does it feel to you to be embarking on raising a kid in this culture, in this Midwestern culture?
It supersedes my passions for transportation planning.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, before I was a parent, before I was married to my wife, I saw these problems and these inequities as problems that I wanted to help resolve. And I had the capacity to do that here through my education and through being linked up with people who really were passionate about these issues. As a parent, I have to figure out my own household and how to keep my family safe first, I suppose.
Is the life you live now a life you could have imagined? I mean, the family life you're describing, is it a life you did imagine, could imagine when you were in Southern California?
No. I always wanted to be a dad, even when I was 19. My mom and brother used to joke about, like, you don't even have a girlfriend. How are you going to be a dad? But, I mean, it was kind of realized once I met my wife that, like, wow, this is it. Let's have a family.
What is it about the Midwest that made, I mean, is it just that you met this person, or is it something bigger about the Midwest that makes that the life you're living possible?
Well, first, I could never have a family with anyone but my wife.
Right, of course.
But, yeah, it's the cost of living is relatively low, and we just have a lot of security as a family. Living here in flexibility.
I'm probably going to get hate mail for this. This sounds like a very Midwestern thing to me. So I, you know, having a kid and then obviously I'm a parent too, and I would do anything for my child, and my child is my priority. But I see that a lot here. So people settle into their families and then kind of sometimes let their professional passions go. And I see that happening more here than I do with my friends who live on the coasts. And I still have a lot of friends in New York who are parents, and I see them still doing these cool, maybe they still take a year, couple years, whatever, but going and doing these really cool things. And I think part of that is being on the coast and being surrounded by something happening all the time and creative people. And there, I'm sure there's a level of competition to it, but people working on these projects all the time. And so people have their kids and then they keep doing these things that they're very passionate about. And I know that people still do that here, but I see more people kind of settling into their comfortable Midwestern lives here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to fight to pull out of that comfort zone, because it is easy.
It's so easy.
You know, in other cities, like, you don't have a choice. You have to choose between a career and a family. And you know, you don't necessarily have to choose here. You can do both, but you will have to work harder to be an advocate when, you know, you have this simple lifestyle that's very comfortable.
It is easy to get into your comfort zone here.
So comfort being a big thing, you know, I want to talk very quickly with John in Kansas City, Kansas. John, just real quick.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, really quickly, I was going to say, listening to your two current members on the radio, that I agree with them, and it's the pace is definitely slower here. I live in Los Angeles. I've lived in Los Angeles for the last 16 years. My parents live in Kansas City for the last 25. I grew up in Wichita, Kansas, and lived in Chicago. I think we just need to be careful of cliches, because I see this pattern of, we're all super busy. I know people here and in Los Angeles, we all wake up every morning with good attitudes. We all try to exercise good value systems throughout the day. I think there's a lot of people that don't just see it as a flyover thing. And I also think that we shouldn't start to generalize different parts of the planet and these cliches that some people can fall into. I think we all lead fast-paced lives, and we all have values.
John, does anything about the Midwest stand out to you, like, as your home? Does anything here feel authentically this is real? This is a real Midwestern thing?
Well, there is. I mean, I think that the concept of real is not real. but the fact that the pace, because density is different here, the pace is different. And then there's a scale of economy, too, because the standard of living in dense areas creates the need to drive the economics every day in your family. So you're pushed. Don't have as much
decompression
space.
John, we have to go.
You're constantly working. Yeah,
but
thanks so much.
Speaking of pace.
I appreciate the show. Take care. Bye.
Okay, thank you. And Emily, can you give a 10-second casserole recipe?
Ooh, you know what? My stuffing recipe is on my blog right now. That's Festive AF. It's lots of bread, lots of butter, veggies, fruit. It's delicious. Go
okay.
get it.
Emily Ferris, Idris Raoufi, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with lots of help from intern Tom Taylor. I'm Gina Kaufman. Enjoy your turkey or tofurkey and stuffing with bread and butter, whatever you're going to eat. Happy Thanksgiving. That's a wrap.
Home in the midst of the corn, the middle of the year.